Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Welcome to the Mystery to Me podcast. I'm Anya Kane.
And I'm Kevin Greenlee.
And we love movies and television shows with a whiff of mystery. Mystery to Me will feature us riffing on murder mysteries, film noir, cozy detective stories, police procedurals, psychological thrillers, legal dramas, tales of teen sleuths, and more.
Once we're done yucking it up about whatever we've just seen, we'll serve up our 5-star final takes on whether it's worth your time.
If you're offended by silliness, profanity, political asides, canine-related interruptions, and losers laughing at their own bad jokes, beware. Also note that some of the stories we'll be talking about are pretty dark, and in some cases exceptionally badly written. So content warning for murder, violence, suicide, torture, rape, racism, misogyny, homophobia, transphobia, and bigotry.
If there's a movie or show you'd like for us to talk about, email us at mysterytomepodcast@gmail.com. Our show's take on genre is pretty loosey-goosey, so as long as your suggestion has some dash of mystery, we're interested in hearing about it.
Spoiler alert! We're going to be discussing the entirety of this show or movie, spoilers and all. So if you want to be surprised, press pause, go watch the thing, then join us for the show. Now that you've heard our spiel, go ahead and polish off those magnifying glasses and slip into your favorite trench coat. Let's get mysterious. So, Kevin, what did we watch?
We watched a film with the great Halliwell Hobbs.
Your favorite.
You're always talking about Halliwell Hobbs and John Ratzenberger.
I got their posters up on in our bedroom.
And, of course, when you think of Halliwell Hobbs, he's perhaps best remembered for his star turn in the, what year is this one?
1943.
He's perhaps best remembered by cinephiles for his star turn in the 1943 film Sherlock Holmes Faces Death.
What a performance!
Which is what we watched tonight.
He played Death, right? I don't even know who this guy is.
We were
just tickled by the name.
It was a delightful name.
Halliwell Hobbs.
And in a movie like this, you have to take pleasure where you can find it.
Yeah, you gotta sift around the cellar floor for some treasure. No spoilers though.
And we should say we're very tired. In fact, you were tired even before you saw this picture, and you were muttering how you wanted to see a film with Razzle Bathbone.
Razzle Bathbone, the hot new bath bomb from Pinkerton Cosmetics.
That's what I said. I said Razzle Bathbone. That kind of gives you a sense of where our minds are going into this and how, you know, this continued to wear on us. And like, it's, I'll say this going into it, Sherlock Holmes faces death should be a...
Should be good.
Balls to the wall experience. It should be a experience that grabs you by the throat and strangles you to death. It shouldn't be about, it shouldn't be so meh. You know?
But then shouldn't it be like perhaps an aging Holmes is forced to confront his own mortality as he's keeping bees?
That sounds like a lot of fun. If you're a fucking nerd. I want some fun action.
You're so mean. You know, some big jock. You're some big jock simpleton. You just want the action.
Big jock simpleton? I'm your wife, jock simpleton. Big Jock Simpleton.
Yeah, I want the action.
Yeah, from a Basil Rathbone, Nigel Bruce movie, I want big laughs, I want big fights, I want big stupidity. That's what I want. I want Nigel Bruce moving room to room, crashing into things and mumbling. That's what I want. That's what I signed up for.
So that's big action for you.
Yes. In one of these movies, yes. Listen, if it was some sort of thoughtful adaptation of a Sherlock Holmes story that, you know, had him confronting death. Yes, I'm sure that would be lovely, handled by the appropriate people. But guess what, Kevin? In the 1940s, they didn't have those kind of thoughts. They didn't know how to do movies. They were just throwing things at the wall. They were just doing whatever. They had a fucking movie where they went to Washington and did a whole 8th grade field trip tour of Washington. That's the you don't want them trying to handle heavy topics. It'll just hurt them. Nigel Bruce could get hurt. You want them to just go and have the fucking time of their lives, and this movie does not do that. But so you would want like kind of a serious toned film.
Sherlock Holmes faces death. That sounds like he's dealing with his own mortality as he's aging.
What would be the mystery?
It doesn't have, not everything has to be a mystery, Anya.
Oh, well, there's where we disagree, I guess. Well, surely you'd have to.
Yeah, I remember early on in our relationship, we were discussing like different programs and TV shows. And he said, you know, I didn't like that. And he said, you know, Kevin, I'm pretty clever. I've been known how to script doctor and improve things. And anything you discussed, he said, you know, Kevin, the show Friends, it really wasn't good. You know what it needed? Murders. Maybe like Ross and Joey could become private detectives. Now that would have been a program, you'd say.
I don't recall this conversation. About Friends specifically.
You certainly said it about Gilmore Girls too.
Okay, I did say it about Gilmore Girls because, I mean, what was that show even about, guys? Come on. They weren't doing anything. I like shows where people do stuff.
By which you mean die.
No, I mean other solve murders. Solve murders. You know, or other assorted crimes. It doesn't have to be murder. White collar crime's a big issue. Tackle that.
Why can't people just live their lives?
Because no one wants to see that. No one wants to see that. Come on. Bah. Gotta be doing something. It's gotta be an angle. A murder angle. No, I mean, listen, I hear what you're saying, but I think, to me, it just, that sounds like a whole, like, depressing 2-hour slog.
As opposed to this?
I hear ya.
This was a 1-hour slog.
This was a 1-hour slog. But I guess I just, like, do I want to, like, oh, let's do a movie where, like, Winnie the Pooh is really sad. It's like, do I want to see that? Is that why I'm going to see a Winnie the Pooh movie? Or am I going to see something, like, cute and, like, for kids? Like,
now, hear me out. What if Winnie the Pooh is sad because Tigger has been murdered and he has to solve the crime? You'd be first in line, waving your dollar bill, saying, take my money. Am I wrong?
Their tops are made out of rubber. Their bottoms are made out of springs. But that didn't save him when he took a head first dive from the sleaziest hotel in Manhattan.
You'd love that. So a sad Winnie the Pooh would work for you.
No. No. Murder. You know
what? You'd want, yeah.
100 Acre Murder.
The Winnie the Pooh story. Who is the murder victim?
I don't want to know. I don't even want to have this conversation anymore. I'm quickly waking up to how disturbing it is. And I want to get out of it quick, before it's too late.
That was like nearly a year ago.
I know. But like, okay.
This program is a shocking document of your depravity.
Oh, but you come out looking great, right?
I'm smelling like a rose.
You're smelling like a rose. People are cheering you on. You're Mr. Hero. And I'm Big Jock Simpleton. What the fuck?
I'm saying, let's have a serious drama. He's, oh, I need action. That's what I like.
We're talking about a Basil Rathbone, Nigel Bruce movie.
Now, Basil Rathbone's a fine actor.
He is a fine actor.
Or as you
actor.
Call him, Razzle.
Razzle. Razzle's when he gets crazy. Razzle's when he gets drunk at parties. No, here's the thing. I mean, I just don't... I mean, I think Basil Rathbone could have done a lot with a really good Sherlock Holmes script. I think that's true. But that's certainly not what they were giving him in this series. The best ones are kind of, like, fun, zany, and the worst ones are like this and boring. Boring and not zany at all, just kind of dumb. And then, like, that one Adventures of Sherlock Holmes was kind of, like, almost good, but not quite, so it just seemed really boring. Yeah, this one had a bunch of elements of other ones. It had a bit of House of Fear in it, you know? And so, like, it maybe a little bit of Scarlet Claw, but, like, not as good as either one.
Had an, like, incongruous patriotic speech at the end.
Oh, we love that. That's a great trend.
The story ends, spoiler alert, the story does end eventually. and then Watson and Holmes get into a car, and suddenly music starts playing, and Holmes says, you know, Watson, the day's coming when men, what was he saying?
I'll pull it up and read it, because it's right here on the Wikipedia page. Do you want me to give the speech?
Give the speech.
I'll give the speech. This is what I say to Kevin when we're driving around. Stuff like this, basically, just comes into my mind. There's a new spirit abroad in the land. The old days of grab and greed are on the way out. We're beginning to think of what we owe the other fellow, not just what we're compelled to give him. The time's coming, Watson, when we shan't be able to fill our bellies in comfort while other folks go hungry or sleep in warm beds while others shiver in the cold. When we shan't be able to kneel and thank God for blessings before our shining altars while men anywhere are kneeling in either physical or spiritual subjection. And God willing, we'll live to see that day, Watson. So, stuff I say all the time. So basically, Holmes, I guess, is like a socialist.
Yeah, you're always dealing the socialist rhetoric.
Yeah, I'm always...
You're a well-known communist.
Eugene Debs over here. I mean...
Well, you have done a lot of time in prison.
That's not even funny. Yeah, I mean, sounds pretty left-wing, pretty suspect. But he just gives these spiels.
And then the music swells up and the picture ends.
And I single.
Oh, good night, everybody.
Give us
your 5-star final take.
It's.
I'm trying, folks.
A single tear runs down Kevin's cheek. It's so funny when they do this. To me, I think it's a treat because it's so dumb. It's
You burst out laughing.
Because it's always the same thing. You know, the camera's like far back and it's just these two. Like old guys in a car driving around, and then Holmes is like, Watson, you know, here's what I'm thinking. And that, and like, isn't that what driving around with your butt is like? You know, one guy's just driving and trying to focus on the road, the other guy's haranguing him about some, as Churchill said, da, 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 da. And I think there's something very delightful about that. And you almost expect Holmes at some point, or Watson at some point, to be like, oh, okay, yeah that's great.
There must be like a supercut on YouTube just of all these speeches.
It's something kind of oddly delightful that is their signature. Ending on the worst possible note with one of your characters basically turning to the camera and be like, so I think we've all learned a bit of a lesson here, folks.
And we should add the speech and these morals and meanings he's suddenly spouting off have nothing to do with the story in the movie.
Basically, it's like just last minute tacked on nonsense. Just like the one in DC the DC film when at the end he's like, America, the great land of opportunity, you know, like, and it's just like kind of be like trying to flatter the American audience or something, but it doesn't really have anything. Like, we didn't see anything about why America is great in the movie. And the same thing with the Canadian one, Scarlet Claw, where he's like, Canada, the great north. And it's like, again, we haven't really seen, all we've seen about Canada and America is like in England, people get murdered here and I have to deal with it. We haven't seen like the Canadian spirit or the American spirit coming through and helping out.
Well, maybe he's like you and he can't have a good time unless there is a murder. So there's a murder.
That sounds kind of wrong. I can't have a good time unless there's a murder. Now no one's going to want to hang out with me anymore. So thanks.
No joke. There was like a police standoff on our street.
Oh, yeah.
And you had nothing to do with that, of course.
No, nothing. No one can prove a goddamn thing. And if you have any questions, talk to my lawyer. We've been through a hard time, folks.
Yeah, there actually was a police standoff.
And we're very tired as a result. But things are great. Things are great at Mystery to Me Studios. No lasting damage. Other than the fact that we had to watch this movie.
Our plan was last night, we were going to watch this classic film, The Maltese Falcon. And then
Falcon?
Have
a... What are you... Even say it right.
We're going to watch this classic film and they have a very respectful, serious discussion about it for our special anniversary program.
Kevin, how did you like The Falcon? What did you think of The
Falcon? And
then
instead, there's a police standoff. We're not allowed to return to our home.
Kevin,
and we're so tired.
Hauled off in handcuffs.
And Anya is reduced to making fun of my pronunciations.
The Falcon.
And we watched this shitty movie.
I really thought the Falcon soared in this film, in this classic film. Kevin, what's your favorite bird of prey?
Perhaps a hawk?
Oh, not an owl?
I know now is your favorite bird of prey.
Not the king of the night, the great horned owl.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
Of course, your favorite birds are birds that kill and commit murders.
That's not my favorite birds are penguins. So unless you count eating krill and fish as murder, which
I guess if you're not a pescatarian, then I guess you would.
But... You know, they're not murderous animals. They're just trying their fucking best.
So what would penguin noir be like?
Oh, well, they kind of look like some of them were like, I mean, oh, some of them, the emperors and the kings, penguins, look like they're wearing little suits when they're adults. So, they kind of would fit into a noir.
Like they're working at a nightclub or something.
Yeah, like they own a sleazy nightclub up, you know, the iceberg.
What would be, like, the performers at the iceberg?
I don't want to know. Why would I want to know that?
Why wouldn't you?
Would it be, like, a rock hopper doing a song?
A rock hopper?
It's a type of penguin, you dolt. And it's a very fancy-looking penguin, I might add. These penguins, the king and... Emperor and rockhoppers don't live in the same area, as far as I know. Maybe I'm wrong. Who the fuck knows? I used to know a lot about this when I was a kid. It was one of my childhood obsessions. This is a rockhopper. It's gonna blow your goddamn mind. It's not what you think. Not what you expect.
Was like a very lovely bird.
Yeah, they got a big, yellow feathers on their heads. It's an extreme look. Very chic. But yeah, maybe he sings Smoke Dreams from Thin Man 2, my favorite song. Smoke Dreams. A little bit of a throwback for you folks. In case you're one of the insane people who stuck around for all those episodes. Well, let's get into this plot. We're very sleep deprived right now. Sorry. We're just going to start using that as an excuse for all our shitty content.
It's a pretty good excuse that there was like a police standoff. We come home this morning. We're finally allowed to return to our home. There's like gun shells like littering our yard, by which I mean we found one.
Penguins and falcons roosting all over the place. Lanny set up a nightclub where someone was performing smoke dreams. Just a nightmare.
Our poor neighbor, they took down his fence so they could drive a fun little SWAT vehicle all through his backyard.
Fun little SWAT vehicle.
Oh, doesn't it look fun, those little like SWAT vehicles?
Aw, little SWAT. I don't know. Little SWAT vehicle. But yeah, we had to stay not in our house last night, so we didn't get very good sleep. And it feels like it's been 2 weeks since 2 days ago. Just always, you know, just always be prepared, folks, that if you live on a cul-de-sac or whatever, you know, sometimes you might not get home. That's the lesson.
You never know which of your neighbors might be the crazy one.
No. No, we didn't guess it either. We didn't guess it. We didn't know. We didn't know the extent of it. Of the insanity. Indiana, though, I mean, talk about...
You think people thought we were the crazy neighbors?
Yeah, probably. People were probably like, those fucking weirdos. You know they're plotting something. Yeah, I think people probably pegged us as the people who were, you know, barricaded in our house. It's one of those things, though. Yeah, you never know what's going to happen. Which brings us to this movie.
He's only a very serious, staring off in the distance, Razzle Bathbone style. Oh. You know, Kevin, you never know what might happen in this great country of ours, of America. A person you look at, you may never be able to really judge him, all that he may be able to accomplish in this crazy workaday world.
As my old friend Razzle Bathbone used to say, America's pretty great. Land of opportunity. Winston Churchill. Do you think... I'm going to ask an offensive question. Because I was kind of like me rambling on about something that I only have a small grasp on while you drive. That sounds sort of like our dynamic. But, I mean, otherwise, I don't think we fall into the Bruce Rathbone dichotomy at all. Is that fair to say? Except I do tend to wander around in dark rooms muttering.
Yeah.
Threatening to shoot anything that moves.
Yeah.
That's where I'm more of a Bruce than a Rathbone.
And I'm more like, I don't make the speeches, the endless speeches that go nowhere, but seem to last forever. That's someone else's department. But I think I have the quiet dignity of a Rathbone.
Oh!
Well, you're more like the bumbling of a Bruce.
Yes, you have the quiet dignity of a Rathbone. Or if you had to compare it to an animal, maybe a falcon. Oh God. Okay, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this film.
The movie opens at a bar. What is the name of this bar?
The Raven and the Rat. Or the Rat and the Raven?
I think it was the Rat and the Raven.
Sorry. Gave the Rat got top billing.
Maybe I think it's alphabetical order.
Maybe it was like a Steve McQueen Paul Newman situation from Towering Inferno where they had to tilt the fonts so that, you know, they both got equal share.
I thought you were going to say it was a Steve McQueen Paul Newman buddy picture. The Rat and the Raven. Two wacky tough guys. One's kind of a schemer.
Yeah, I've watched this.
Never know which side of the law he's going to end up on, and the other one has more dignity and class.
He's like an art thief. The Raven's an art thief. Steals artwork.
And the Rat is his man on the inside.
Yeah, he's gonna more uses his fists. But he's smart too. He's got street smarts. He didn't learn any fancy things from a book. No, that sounds great, honestly. Rat and the Raven.
But you'd only watch it if there was a murder in it.
Just because I said that the Gilmore Girls would benefit from the odd homicide doesn't mean that I myself am a homicidal maniac. I just thought that show was kind of interesting but boring, and I didn't watch the whole thing. And because I got bored because nothing was happening and people were just talking. Some people like shows like that. That's fine for them. But for me, I'm going to maybe add some notes and say, maybe someone should get murdered so I can be entertained. And isn't that what we really want, right? That for me to be entertained by these shows.
See, this show is just talking. Do you think this show would be better if one of us died violently?
Oh, you mean our podcast?
Yes.
Jesus, Kevin. Why don't you settle down over there? We're not like a show. We're just podcasts. People playing their cars to, I don't know. I don't know why people would listen to us, because we're just really obnoxious, weird people. But
that's our marketing brand.
No one's sitting down. Exactly. That's what it says in the About Us on Facebook.
So don't you envision people like having one of those big, oversized, old-time radios, calling the kids in, say, it's time for Mystery to Me.
Oh, it's like the fireside chats. Well, that's how you imagine yourself, since you think you have the quiet dignity of a falcon or a rathbone.
And you imagine just people desperate to avoid conversations on long car rides with their families. They turn us on.
I imagine everyone who listens to us, it's either their last show, or it's another straw on the camel's back. I feel like everyone, like, well, why the fuck did I start listening to this? I enjoy Dragnet, figured I'd turn this on, somehow downloaded all the episodes, and now here I am, and I'm just fucking done, and they just turn off and delete it off their podcast app. That's what I imagine the average listener experience is.
I think some of our episodes have gotten like negative downloads somehow. Like Boomtown season 2 was like negative 100.
Somehow we have to give back downloads from other more successful episodes just to cover our losses on those ones. Bad bet, Boomtown. Who would have thought? Not me. I said, Kevin, that's a sure winner. That's going to soar as high as a falcon. Or a raven. But quoth the raven, nevermore.
So this bar actually has a raven in it.
They were hiding the rat from the local health inspector, apparently, because he does not appear in this movie. And some guy is like fucking around with the 1940s jukebox, starts bleeding from the hand, and then the owner's just yammering on, explaining the local manor to this guy, the Musgrave Manor, which of course takes its name from the Musgrave ritual, which is one of the original.
So the manor is named after a Sherlock Holmes story?
Yeah, isn't that
That's
a weird
very
coincidence?
Meta.
They're really getting wild here in terms of, it's like a Sherlock Holmes theme park. That scene where Basil Rathbone encounters a mascot guy dressed up like Sherlock Holmes was just meta hilariousness. And just goes rambling on. I mean, like, this always happens in these movies. And, like, if you were at a bar or, like, at any restaurant, any business, you know, and some guy just came, yeah, the old Musgrave place, those men have blood on their hands since the days of the knights. And you just get the, like, what are you talking about? You're not talking to me. Your eyes are glazed over. You're looking off in the middle distance and you're talking at me about some weird shit. And I just want to go. I mean, I would.
No, you don't.
You would assume you're in a wicker man situation at that point.
If you're in some small town diner or something, and some old person wanders up next to you and starts telling you some local colorful crime story from the past, giving you all the tea, as the kids say, on the big families in town, you're going to be listening and taking notes.
You know, Kevin, just because you enjoy doing that to people doesn't mean that they enjoy having it done to them.
I go to diners and talk about you.
Oh, and you know, on the south side of Indianapolis, there's an old crone who's always yelling at me. And people are just like, sir, please leave if you're not going to buy anything. She makes fun of the way I say falcon. She likes murders. But, yeah, so they're talking about the Musgraves. This is a Sherlock Holmes story, but this movie has nothing to do with that aside from the same name. And we then go to Musgrave Manor. Turns out there's a Musgrave family. They own this big manor, and it's being used as a hospital for World War II soldiers to sort of recuperate after being injured or traumatized.
And the interesting thing is these soldiers who are recovering there are they soldiers from the First World War? Because they're all very old.
They didn't get around to healing them the first time, so they figured they'd give them a crack at this one. Yeah.
We talk about these men as if they were recently in combat. And they look older than me. And I'm 72.
It's the Musgrave home for elderly soldiers / character actors from the 1940s. It's really odd. I mean, you think the collective age would be younger, but you know, basically. One of the doctors gets stabbed in the neck. That's what happens. And Watson's like, I don't want to accuse any of these vets of doing this, even though I know some of them do have likely PTSD. So I'm going to just recruit Holmes to figure this out before.
So he can accuse one of the vets.
I'm going to put it all on him to accuse one of my patients of being a psycho. And so, you know, and also the clock strikes 13 and everyone's all like noticing it. And it's like, oh my God. I mean, your parents have a clock in their house. I wouldn't notice if it struck 13. That would go right past my head. I would have no idea that some nefarious shit was afoot.
The clock strikes 13. And then one of the characters says to the other, well, you know, the last time that happened, the very next day, your father died.
What if it was like, my father's still alive. He's just in a rest home. Oh, sorry. I was thinking of something else. Like, what the fuck? Also, maybe get your clocks fixed, or maybe don't have the clock going off like that, if that's a concern.
Why would you remember to tell it like that about someone else's father and their death?
Your dad was crazy. Remember that time he got murdered after the clock struck 13? Oh, and that just happened now. Also, if your dad died, or like if your dad died in suspicious circumstances after an odd event like that, and that was noted by everyone, including your household staff, wouldn't you get the fuck out of Dodge at that point? When it's going, when it's chiming again? Like, either someone's fucking with you or someone's going to murder you. Just get out. Just get an Airbnb.
So your answer to everything.
Exactly.
Spilled some water on the floor the other day. He said, Kevin, let's just get out.
Burn it all down. Then the standoff ensued. The one nice part of this movie that I kind of liked was when Holmes and Watson reunite and they seem very happy to see each other. And like, I will say, like in most of the movies, not all, but most of the movies, I think Rathbone and Bruce like have a vibe of like liking each other, you know, and like being each other's friend. And I think that's impressive because Bruce is, his character is written as such a bumbling fool in all these. So sometimes you're like, why are these people friends? But you do get the sense that they like each other. And I wanted to say at least one positive thing because that's something that this movie made me reflect on. because it's all going to be negative for you. Out. So one nice shining moment of friendship before we dive into it.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
So, old Jeff, I wrote down old Jeff Muscoot, which I meant to say Musgrave, but there was a Muscoot farm near where I grew up, and we that was somewhere we would go on vacation, you know, like class trips a lot. So I always think of Muscoot farm whenever Musgrave stuff comes up, however infrequently that is. But old Jeff Muscoot's dead. He's the oldest brother in the Musgrave family. And he's seen in the beginning being like, you can't marry that brash American officer, to his younger sister, which I guess is, you know, something siblings were deciding for each other in the 40s. I don't know. But he's murdered. And basically, Watson and Holmes immediately discover his body upon entering the grounds. And Holmes realizes that he was bashed in the head, but what he really died of was, like, a spike in his neck, so, like, yuck, but, yeah. And so now it's clearly crazy, you know, some bad shit is afoot in the Musgrave Manor. It's not just an attempted murder, it's murder now.
Right. So this is where we get into the Musgrave ritual. Can you explain what that is?
The Musgrave ritual, which I was surprised to see from this shot, is apparently open to all guests that are in the house at this time, is where the head, quote-unquote head of the household, I guess the oldest male sibling or female sibling, if no males are available, gets sort of sworn in by their younger sibling reciting a bizarre and nonsensical poem about pages pertaining to different high estate households killing each other, and that's the ritual in a dark room while there's thunder outside, and everyone looks on awkwardly. That's what it is.
This poem.
Did your family have something like that?
Yeah, I was gonna say, when I die, are you gonna make everybody listen to you recite some endless poem?
And it's such a weird poem that it almost sounds like they're just ad-libbing it, or it's like some sort of slam poetry thing, and it's like, I guess every family.
I could see that happening. I die, and you tell, I'm gonna have an amazing poem, and then you forget to write it.
Oh, and then, shit!
And they call you up, and you improv something.
Well, I'm certainly not gonna improv anything right now.
Do it.
No.
We'd love to hear it. Put my feet up. Listen to my eulogy.
Soon to be
in rhyme.
As you said, you are 72, so I gotta get warmed up. No, I'm not gonna do any rhymes. This is insane. This made me nervous just seeing it. And they're like, oh, our family dies mysteriously every generation. So like, maybe stop doing the fucking creepy ritual. Maybe that's not helping. Just be normal.
I don't even remember. Is this what the ritual was in the story?
I truly don't remember. Musgrave Ritual, I think, was one of those later books, right?
I haven't read all the stories for like 30 years.
The only fortunate part of this scene is that lightning bursts in the house and a suit of armor explodes. So you know, it goes on forever, but there is an ending there. Kevin started to read the summary for the Musgrave Ritual, but he stopped because he got bored. That tells you everything you need to know. Also, then without much further ado, the next brother gets murdered in pretty short order. And at this point, you start to notice that Holmes seems more tense than in some previous films. In some previous films, he's kind of just like, haha, yeah, whatever. And then in other films, he's kind of easily angered by Watson's bumblings. But in this, he's like mad at everybody. He's
always snapping.
He's snapping at people. Like at one point he's talking to the drunk butler that eavesdrops on everyone, and the drunk butler is like creaking his chair, and he's like, "Stop it!" You know, like it's like, "Whoa," not really the laid back Holmes or the eternally pissed at Watson Holmes, but polite to everyone else that we're used to. It's really more of like a, this is getting to him, man. The movie's so boring, it's actually affecting its main character, and he's kind of lashing out. Yeah, you know, Lestrade shows up and accuses the American officer that the lady of the house wants to marry of being behind the murders, and then is there to pratfall over an ottoman and get called undignified by Watson. Always a treat.
Because Watson, of course, is the very definition of dignity.
People, you know, various servants are caught sneaking around, going through priest holes and hiding behind changing, like, what would you call that? Dividers? Room dividers?
Sure.
And then they have a big dumb chess game because they figure out that the Musgrave Ritual must be leading to something. I don't know. But they like line up everybody in the movie.
Like the floor of the house resembles like a chessboard. So let's play human chess.
There's literally an episode of The Prisoner that is basically all this, which
what happens there?
Checkmate.
What's the point of it?
It's all about how some people in the village are guardians and some people are like, you know, pawns. And so the prisoner number 6, played by the unforgettable Patrick McGowan, has to do this human-sized chess game while also sort of trying to forge alliances with other people in the game to see if he can escape. And, you know, and things go from there. Things get weird. Love that show. And I remember being like, that would be fun to play a big chess game. And then I saw this movie and I'm like, maybe not. The thought of sitting up on a big chair and directing people where to go, that appeals to me.
What a shock. You used to be a lifeguard.
Yeah. Used to be a I wasn't even thinking about that, but yeah, I guess so.
So you were in a big chair directing everybody on the beach. They had to bow to your authority.
People stopped going to my beach because I would just make them do big chess games. Pawn to C3. Can we please just play in the water now? I was a very easygoing lifeguard.
You were very chill, is the kid said.
Yo, you're so hip. I know you would be too afraid of the power of sitting in the big chair. You would turn from it. You couldn't deal
with it. You think I could take it?
I think you would overthink it. And then you'd be like, I just feel ridiculous up in this big chair. And that's the thing. You have to, the person who wields the power has to be not afraid of looking ridiculous in the big chair. That's what imbues it with such power.
So it didn't bother you to look ridiculous up there?
I didn't look ridiculous. I looked powerful. I looked like a queen, on top of her splendid throne. Splendid wooden throne with a big surfboard underneath it.
Did you have like a crown?
Obviously. How else is it? How else are you going to be taken seriously at the beach?
So like a scepter and like a big royal robe?
Obviously. Well, no, not a robe because that would, you know, that would drag you down if you needed to get in the water.
So how many lives do you think you saved?
Oh, countless. I didn't save a single life. I killed several people, though. No, I didn't. I never did any rescues. No, that's I when I was teaching swim class, kids are either in the really scared of no. I mean, kids are like either nervous with the water, scared of the water, or they want to drown themselves, sacrifice themselves to the drowned god, and you know, so you have to save those kids, but they don't.
So
care.
Some of the kids are suicidal.
Basically, when it comes to water, yeah.
How did this manifest itself?
I remember this one little boy who was very cute, but he was like 3, and he would just throw himself in the pool and sink to the bottom. Like, he didn't know how to swim, but he just really wanted to be in the water. So, you know, you kind of just have to pick him up and be like, okay, just chill. And other kids, if, you know, they got splashed, they'd be crying, you know? So it was a whole range of human behaviors that you see when teaching swim lessons, but you know, you just have to be, you know, encouraging and not push anyone too hard, but encourage them to, you know, put your face in the water. And for the people who are trying to drown themselves, you have to say, well, maybe just, you know, hold on to the wall and be safe. But yeah, kids are, yeah, some kids are not very risk adverse to a crazy degree.
So you did save some lives,
but those were like, everyone would have eyes on those kids, you know, and like, it wasn't like there was a drowning situation. It was more of like, you just, if you're teaching a class, it's a small class. So you're just, you know, someone falls, you know, someone jumps in the water, then you're kind of just watching them and you know, you get them if they're in the little kids class. So that's totally different. That's nothing like beach lifeguarding. That's the real empire. What are we talking about?
I don't know. So tired.
Did you ever save anyone as a pizza delivery driver?
I saw some stuff that's probably not fit to be discussed. I never saved a life.
Were you in a porn, Kevin?
I saw some stuff.
Kevin, were you in a porn?
I was not in a porn. Well, I think...
Well, actually, let me clarify that.
There were a couple of instances. There was one instance where I think I wasn't on camera, but I think somebody had his own little fantasy that involved the arrival of a pizza delivery person.
Your starring performance.
I wasn't the star.
God. So you were in a porn.
Somebody had a sexual fantasy. This particular anecdote I'm thinking of, somebody calls and orders a pizza, and I deliver the pizza, and the man is sitting in the front room of his house in front of a very large picture window. And this is night, and all the lights in the front of the house are on, so he can be very clearly seen.
I'm scared.
And he was watching a television movie. The volume was turned loud enough that I could tell, as I was going up there, what the movie was. It was a movie about the adventures of some cheerleaders.
Oh, my God.
And he was naked from the waist down.
Could you see everything?
Yes.
What the fuck? That's so creepy.
And he was pleasuring himself.
And what did you do?
I gave him his pizza, and he pretended to be like a little embarrassed. But he also said, "Oh, I thought Michelle delivered the pizzas." So I think he had his own little porn thing in mind that he wanted to display himself for Michelle.
Who's Michelle?
She was just another pizza delivery driver. Oh, not her
so
real name.
Creepy. Oh my God, that like makes my skin crawl. That's awful.
Yeah.
Fucking people are just fucking fucked up.
There are other times you'd like deliver pizzas to like a hotel room, and there's like naked people or people obviously have just been having sex, and it was an awful job.
Not that none of our listeners would ever do something like that, but guys, everyone just get your shit together. Come on. What the fuck? Worst thing that happened to me as a lifeguard is that on my second day on duty, I got into the work, which was a beach, and I looked up on my lifeguard stand, which was sort of like a wooden platform with a wooden chair built in. Someone had smeared feces all over it. No idea. So I was kind of like, huh, well, that's fucked. And I called my boss, and there was a whole thing. And I don't even remember what happened, but I just remember being like, huh, that sucks.
You're quite the raconteur.
What do you say to that? Just life's fucked up sometimes. It really creeped me out. I was like, oh, man, is this like some beach stalker who's going to, like, kill me or something? You know what I mean? Like, he's ramping his way up, but nothing ever happens, so it was all right.
So it would be the next step after feces.
Maybe, dead animals or something? I don't know. But I didn't blow my whistle once on the first day, so I couldn't have, like, I didn't kick anyone off the beach who's trying to get revenge or anything. But, you know, it was really creepy. Like someone had deliberately done it all over the stand. It wasn't just like in one place.
They put some thought into it.
Yes.
Trying to impress a lady.
Oh no, Kevin.
I had a crush on you, okay? I was trying to get some attention.
Kevin, that's not how you win over the ladies.
Well, you're not my wife.
So it worked. Jesus. Traumatizing young people jobs. Always fun. But what's not fun is this movie making us watch Holmes and Watson run around trying to find basically paperwork. They're like, they want to find the poem of the Musgrave Ritual. So they're like, where could she have put this file? Where did I put down my paper? And it's like, I go through this every day. I don't need to see, you know, fiction's most beloved detective duo do this, you know. Oh, where did I put my phone bill? Oh, no, I can't find it. I mean, just come on. Give me a break. And yeah, they go into the, they figure out, like, it doesn't even make any sense, because they figure out, like, one square on the chessboard that they have to go into, but it's not like they dig into it. They just go into the basement then that hasn't been used in a while. I mean, they could have just gone into the basement in the first place and figured out, you know, I think, I don't know. I wasn't really paying it that much attention. I shouldn't be critiquing it. I shouldn't be nitpicking. Basically, they find the old dead. They find the old alcoholic butler dead down there. And Sherlock says that the old man tried to write his killer's name in the dust, and that he's going to leave to go get chemicals in order to treat it and read it. And he also finds this old-timey document, and when everyone's like, what's that? And he's like, it's just an old document. Don't worry about it. No one questions him. So he ostensibly leaves. Nigel Bruce seemingly gets locked in a room. Typical. One of the soldiers compares being in the state with orders not to leave as being in a concentration camp or like an internment camp. Like, I was like, oh, that's, come on, what are we doing here? And the young doctor who got his, you know, his neck slashed in the beginning, he goes down into the basement, and Holmes pops up and is like, ha ha, I knew it was you. There was nothing written here. I just wanted to see who would come down here, obviously. And then Holmes gives this whole big speech about, like, how, yeah, I went down here alone and then didn't tell anyone, and I had to slip past Watson, and Watson doesn't know a thing, and I'm just down here alone, and he's trying to get the guy to attack him, take the gun, and confess, which then Dr. Sexton proceeds to do and then starts shooting at Holmes. So Holmes dies, and that's the end of the film. He did what Moriarty couldn't do, just shot Holmes and was done with it. No, he obviously they're blanks because Sherlock Holmes loaded the gun with blanks. Then Lestrade and Watson march out and arrest this guy. And the whole scheme was basically that this doctor who was working at this hospital is an egomaniac and at some point was, like, looking for the treasure, I guess, found the treasure and realized that if he married the youngest sister of the Musgrave family and killed her two brothers, then he and the sister would inherit a massive swath of land worth millions of dollars. Because back in the medieval times, the king agreed to give the Musgraves this land. What a plan! What a scheme! I bet that's why you married me, Kevin. Because my old crown grant. I mean, a compelling discussion. I'm sure it could be had if for people who know about real estate and ancient crown titles. But we're not those people, and we don't care. And it's a stupid motivation. Because also, I'll have you note, just in case you're confused and thinking that this is a slightly better movie than it is, I don't think there's a scene that Dr. Sexton, the bad guy, and the young Musgrave lady share at all. I don't think there's a scene where they even, like, he offers her a cigarette. I mean, there's nothing. Maybe you should have started to get the work on the wooing part of things at some point. Or at least laying the groundwork for that, because all she has to do is say, "Who the fuck are you? Get out of my face," and then your whole multiple murder scheme is come to nothing. Right?
Yeah.
Are we all together on this? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right.
Ah! It was just really stupid motivation. And then and also, he made himself very suspicious. The other two guys got, the other three guys got murdered in pretty short order. He only got slashed in the neck. You always got to, you got to wonder about someone who, could have potentially self-injured and, survived the attack where others didn't. And he also was the coroner on these two cases, and he failed to see that they died because they were stabbed with, like, little needle things. So, suspicious. So, and I just was wondering, Kevin, can you imagine if the police ever did this in real life? Got their top detective to be like, yes, I figured it out, and I know it's you, but I'm here alone, and oh, no, now you have my gun, and this blank.
Isn't that what happened in our street last night?
What the whole shootout was about?
Yeah.
No, I mean, like, would that hold up in court in real life?
Probably not.
If you Mirandize them?
So yeah, I have this gun on you. It'd be a shame if you took this gun from me and threatened to kill me. But of course, if you did, you'd still have the right to remain silent. And anything you say could and would be used against you in a court of law. And of course, you'd have the right to an attorney, even if you have a gun on me.
I mean, yeah. What a strategy. A winning strategy. And then this is what prompts the bizarre speech at the end. Basically, Holmes and Watson go to Sally, who's the Musgrave lady, who wants to marry an American officer who's recuperating. And she's basically like, I never heard of this guy. Fuck him. Like, why would I want to marry him? And then they're like, well, now you could have millions of dollars, because technically this ancient document is going to hold up in modern UK courts, which I don't know British law. Maybe it would. I'm not even criticizing that part of it. But you'll be basically owner of all this land and farms and factories. And she's basically like, won't I be like kicking a bunch of business owners and people who own their houses and tenants and stuff off the land? And they're like, yeah. And so then she burns the document.
That's the picture.
And that's the show, folks.
So, five-star final pick.
Well, what do you? What is your five-star final before I do it?
Sherlock Holmes faced death. We faced boredom and despair.
So who had it worse, really? I'd say that this picture was ritualistically dull.
Thanks for listening this week. I'd like to give a special thanks to Kevin T. Greenlee, who's no relation to me. He's the guy that composed the great music for this podcast, and you can find him on the web at kevintg.com.
You can follow us on Twitter at Mystery to Me. That's Mystery _2_me_. And at Mystery to Me Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.
And you can always send us recommendations and feedback of any kind at mysterytomepodcast@gmail.com.
We're not teens setting up Hotmail accounts in the early 2000s, so all of those spell out 2 as T-O.
Thanks so much for listening.